Hey everyone, welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. This is a special matinee performance or episode, and we just thank you for joining us tonight. This whole month of June now, we are going to be talking about high school. And actually today we're going to be talking about post-high school, but what parents should be thinking about and students should be thinking about during the high school years so that your student is ready afterwards. And so today with me, I've got Vicki Brett and Amanda Slogi. And they are going to be talking to us about what you need to know about accommodations after high school and what you need to be doing now and some of the laws and things like that. And they're with an organization called Inclusion Education Project. And so Amanda and Vicki, I would love for you guys to kind of start out our time by just letting our audience know who you are and why you're passionate. What's the passion behind your starting this organization and then what you do?
You want to start, Amanda?
Sure. So, Vicki and I went to law school kind of on different paths from each other. But we met in law school and kind of came with this shared passion for helping people, but specifically helping children living with disabilities. Mm. I was a child development major in college, and I was kind of on track to becoming a special education teacher. My aunt's a special ed teacher, and I loved working with kids. I ended up working at a charter school that was a full inclusion school. That was a one in a million. Everything's working right the way full inclusion should. Right. And fell in love with the kids that I worked with, but quickly realized how that is not the case across the board, that it really was a one in a million school. And kind of realized from a lot of the families that I worked with just how much red tape there is, even for teachers, that many teachers mean well and want to do so much more, but there's so many hurdles that they face. Right. And I just kind of realized that that was going to be a problem for me, that I wasn't going to last very long in a system like that.
Right.
And I found out about the legal process, and it was something I had always been told, like, you should go to law school, and I fought it for so long, and this kind of just meshed them both together, and I said,
awesome.
You know what, maybe this is the right fit for me, and luckily enough, I, you know, went to law school, I met Vicki, and started practicing in this area of law, and found that it really was a perfect fit to kind of blend my two passions of being able to help these kids, and really see how, I mean, I just fell in love with just how much potential and how amazing these kids are that they really need a fair shake. They need someone to speak for them.
Right. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, same. We came together about 6 years ago, and we decided, we were at two separate law firms when we both started out as young attorneys. I actually graduated a year before Amanda, so I was out in the world doing special education for a boutique law firm, but also starting to do a lot of family law, and a little bit of personal injury. So after Amanda graduated, we would get together and we kind of talk about the cases that we had, and just the universe kind of just pushed us in a moment to start our law firm. And also our nonprofit. We really did not think the nonprofit would take off as quickly as it did, or that our law firm would. So the Inclusive Education Project has changed a lot. And now, you know, we're able to provide pro bono, so free and low cost services to families. So that ranges from filing complaints against school districts for violations of the Individuals with Disability Education Act, the IDEA, the federal law we work under. And also we advocate at IEP meetings. So sometimes parents, just whether they speak English or another language, sometimes they things translated. Sometimes they're saying the same exact thing that the school district is saying. So often we are translators, and we're really counselors in every sense of the way. Parents usually find us when they're beaten down, frustrated, angry. And we really try to work to rebuild the relationship between the school and the parent. The child is really the one who suffers the most. That's how we kind of came together.
Oh, that's awesome. And you practice out of California.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Just so our legal practice and the cases that we take on are in California. Mm-hmm. But our nonprofit has kind of spread, especially in those last 2 years when we created mm-hmm. a podcast, the Inclusive Education Project right. podcast, mm-hmm. Really meant to try to spread the word and change the conversation. Oh, perfect. Change the conversation a little bit more about education rights. And, you know, our goal, obviously we came from a background of being attorneys and, mm-hmm. you know, that's very litigious, but that's not really our goal, especially the nonprofit. It's more right. to educate as many families and mm-hmm. organizations and schools as possible about, you know, what everybody should be considering with regards to children living with disabilities and what we should be doing differently and how, you know, the system isn't going to change with a bunch of lawsuits. It's just not. It's going to change with everyone being educated on what are better practices and how can mm-hmm. we better serve these families.
Right. You can put out, you know, this is the goal. And a lot of times when you're stuck in the middle of these situations with so many kids with issues and understaffed schools and not the training for the teachers, that they don't even know what that end goal even looks like. And so to be able to provide that is a wonderful thing. So I'm excited that you guys are here with us. And I also want to thank Seven Sisters Homeschool for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more about them halfway through the show, but I want to thank them for that. Like I said, this month we're focusing on high school and accommodations. And I know we have a lot of information even on our website about accommodations and how to help students while they're in those school years. But oftentimes as parents, we get so stuck in that helping them now that we forget that we need to prepare to help them later. So what, I guess the first question I'd want to ask you is, why is this so important? Why should we think ahead that far as parents when we're helping our children? And what advantages does that give our student as they graduate if we do some preparatory work before they finish their high school years?
I think a big thing to consider is that, you know, there's not a set time when you should start preparing for after high school. It's really going to be dependent on the student. Some students, we need to start prepping in elementary school. Others, we can wait until a couple years into high school. Because oftentimes we're not just talking about what accommodations do they need to be asking for and how to prep, and we can talk about, you know, assessment process and whatnot. But a lot of times it's about what skills does the student need to have mastered before mm-hmm. they even enter the community, the workforce right. or college, mm-hmm. from independent skills, study skills, being able to self-advocate. These are the things that are not going to be taught and mastered in a year. Mm-hmm. So waiting until they're junior, senior isn't going to necessarily work. Some of our kiddos, when we're looking at goals and IEPs, even starting in elementary school, that mm-hmm. like that's mm-hmm. the purpose. It's not just to help them the now, the in second grade getting their work done. It's to prepare them for their future, because the parent and the aide isn't always going to be there.
Right. Yeah, that's very true.
I think parents also understanding that K-12, the districts are legally responsible for their students' education, right? Mm-hmm. And colleges are not. The student, the onus is on the student. That is who mm-hmm. is responsible for making requests for, and then for the college to respond. So while we deal with the IDEA, the Individuals with Disability Education Act for K-12 or 3-22, we're dealing with a different set of the laws. So we're dealing with the American right. Disabilities Act, mm-hmm. ADA, and then also Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. So I think that even though there's some Section 504 for K-12, you know, the biggest thing is that, you know, if you as a college receive federal assistance, you know, then you have to adhere to Section 504. And I think that is the biggest difference. And there are colleges out there that have really great student services. That's where you're going to want to go. So when you're looking even at colleges, you're going to really want to look to see what that student support or disability center really is able to provide, just based on the age of your child. And like Amanda said, that can, you know, preparing your child definitely can start at any time, but having that kind of focus really starts with even requesting accommodations for the SATs and things like that. Mm-hmm. So even though that's, you know, typical around junior, senior year, there's no problem with talking to the IEP team, you know, day one of freshman year.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good thing to point out, that the law does change between those two, that graduation point and when your student goes on, whether to, you know, work or college. And I love that you pointed out, you know, so colleges are very different on what programs they offer.
Right.
And but what if a parent wants to make sure that their student has all the accommodations that they need, they're looking at a college, is there anything that they need to prepare ahead of time so that they can advocate and their student can advocate, hopefully for themselves, to be able to request those accommodations when they're making that transition?
Yeah, so, you know, the IEP team, if the student has an IEP, should be having a transition plan in the IEP. And that transition plan should discuss not only all the skills that need to be developed, like I discussed before, but also what steps should be taken from investigating what schools might be appropriate for the student. And part of that is, what programs does each school have, from the community colleges to the four-year colleges, depending on what kind of track the student's on. Sometimes that transition plan will include having the student work with someone on the IEP team to look all this stuff up. Uh-huh. It's not necessarily on the burden is not necessarily on the parent to investigate this. This mm-hmm. should be part of the transition planning, which starts at age 16. So we mm-hmm. should have a good 2 years, junior and senior year, where the students are looking into different schools, whether it's within their geographic boundaries or if they're, you know, capable of going to a 4 year, say, further away.
Right.
You know, but a good rule of thumb is that if you have an IEP, having an updated IEP where the accommodations are very clear, and having an updated assessment are probably the two most important things. Because most colleges, while they're going to look at records that the student brings them, they're mostly looking at when's the latest assessment and making sure it's not more than a year old. So
really,
this is something that a lot of families have some trouble with, because the high school maybe did a triennial their sophomore or junior year. And
right.
so according to triennial rules, you wouldn't need to do it for another 3 years. And so therefore, it's going to be after they graduate. So many
right.
schools say, well, you're in your senior year. We already have an IEP that's working. We don't need to do assessments. And parents think, oh, that's true. But what the problem is with that is, if the assessment is more than a year old by the time the student starts in the fall for their first year of college, many schools will consider that to be too old of an assessment. So what we recommend is that in your senior year, you conduct an assessment. And if it can be done in the middle of the year, towards the end of the school year, that's going to be best, because then it's the newest.
It lasts longer.
Fresh.
Right.
Uh-huh. And same goes for accommodation. So we have this rule of thumb for all accommodations in every IEP across the board. You want to make sure accommodations are very clear, especially when we're transitioning, whether it's transitioning from middle school to high school or from high school to college. The accommodations shouldn't just read extra time, right? It should
right.
say extra time on tests in a separate setting for these subjects, or it should say extra time to complete and turn in. Maybe the student's needs are that they are able to do the work in class, but they need a little bit of time to kind of do their own edits. So maybe they need to turn it in a day later. Maybe they need extra time to process information, so they need more time on their tests. So, but if it just says extra time on work, how is the college
right.
to know what the student's unique needs are? Because the college doesn't have an obligation to assess. So they may look at that and say, I think that's too vague. We don't really know what's being provided, so we're not going to provide it. So you want to make sure
right.
we use our WH questions all the time, right? Our who, what, where, why, when.
Exactly.
We want to use those with the accommodation. when is this being provided, how. It just makes things clear for everybody to be on the same page. Mm-hmm.
That's great. You got something to add, Vicki?
Yeah. So on that, if the colleges are obligated to provide reasonable accommodations. So I think parents also need to be, and the student need to be prepared that, you know, the school will respond in order to provide, and it's equal access to the education for the student. So it is a little right. bit different. Mm-hmm. College can refuse the accommodation for a couple different reasons and be within their right to do so. If the accommodation puts excessive financial and or administrative burden on the institution, mm-hmm. If the accommodation would try to change the nature of the academic program or classroom or the curriculum, if it's going to give an unfair advantage to the student, mm-hmm. lowering academic standards, just significantly altering what it is that you're required to do to complete the class. Mm-hmm. And then if it's of a more personal nature, so if the student had a one-to-one aid in high school, a college mm-hmm. would necessarily need to be required to provide personal care, attendance, you know, personal readers, personal devices. Whereas in, you know, K through 12 under the IDEA, if your child needs a tablet, you know, the school is obligated to provide it, right? If they need one-to-one, they're obligated mm-hmm. to provide it. It's just a different realm once we get to college, right? It's kind of like, well, you're 18, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, kind of deal. So I think that's important for parents to know that distinction as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is good to know. Because we get into that mindset. And even as homeschoolers, you know, a lot of our parents that had that homeschool now were in the public school. So they do have that mindset that this is what we fought so much, we got this, and now we're going to fight again with the college, and it's just not the same thing.
Yeah.
And to come in with that understanding that it's that, you know, equal playing field, and these are college credits that they're looking at. We got...
So I don't know what happened.
Back. She just disappeared for a while. those are some good tips for families. And I know our parents often ask, because they homeschool, they're often the ones writing the IEPs. And so we have an IEP template on our website that's free, and also a template for a transition plan. So parents can work through that and work with their team of therapists and the other people that, you know, maybe tutors that they work with their students, and they can work on that transition plan in the same way and have the same documentation. So. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And I think with that, one thing that would be important for them to note is we have to always make sure that we're being very clear the distinction between accommodations and modifications.
Yes. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah. So a lot of times IEPs will have things written in accommodations that are actually modifications. Mm. And it makes a difference, especially in college. Because while colleges are required to provide reasonable accommodations, they're not required to provide modifications. Right. So when we're looking at altering content, typically that's when it's a modification versus an accommodation. A good rule of thumb is really looking towards that content. So the best way to describe kind of a difference is for math. If a student is required to complete problems that are addition and subtraction, two digits by two digits, if the student has a worksheet that is 10 problems, an accommodation might be they only have to fulfill 5 problems because maybe endurance is an issue. Maybe it takes them a little bit longer to process. So doing 10 questions, it takes a long time. But if they complete the 5, they can still demonstrate whether they've mastered the skill. Right. The content is still the same. It's not changing. Mm-hmm. But if you start saying, well, they're not ready to do 2-digit by 2-digit, they need to do 1-digit by 1-digit. Mm-hmm. We are now altering the content standards and the mastery is different. So completing 5 or 10 problems of 1-digit by 1-digit addition and subtraction is a different content standard than 2-digit by 2-digit. So there are times when IEP teams even and 504 plan teams and parents will write things that are helpful for the student and helps them be successful. And that's perfectly fine in the K through 12 setting. But if it is technically changing the content or the mastery level, the skill level, the content standards, then it is a modification. And in kindergarten through eighth grade, it doesn't have too much of a distinction on, say, grades or report cards, because we're generally looking at wanting to make sure we're getting to the level that the student is at. And typically, you know, either the student is far below grade level and we're not necessarily looking at, you know, gen ed classes come high school, or the student is close where maybe they need some modifications, but eventually it just might take them, say, a year and a half to get through all the content standards, then a year. So eventually they'll get there. They just need it at a slower pace. But when we get to ninth grade and above, the distinction has more merit. It makes more of a difference because we are looking at the requirements under the state education codes. So in California, the California Education Code does have guidelines as to what is required to fulfill a high school diploma. And so if you're modifying content a little bit, it's generally considered okay in California. There are other states that if you modify it all, it's considered, you know,
right.
It's not going to be
a state by state thing.
Right. So we want to look at that and make sure that the student is mastering, especially when we look at what classes are they're taking. So the same kind of goes for college. We want to make sure that, you know, we're giving them that fair and appropriate access to their schooling. So a lot of times families will have these modifications written as accommodations in their IEPs or 504 plans, and it works great. And they have these expectations that if we get this, it works well. They go to their college and the college says, no, we're not going to provide that because that's a modification. They get that shock. So it's important for teams to really make that distinction when writing the IEPs and 504 plans.
Great point, yes.
And examples of accommodations that could be provided in a college setting, I think, is probably a good time to talk about.
Yeah, definitely.
So priority registration. You know, you don't have that.
Right,
in K-12, right? You're not even thinking about that. Reduced course load, like the actual, you know, maybe the reading.
Yes, and it's usually that four classes or three classes that are required for a full-time student are way too much. Yeah,
absolutely too much. But especially if the child had a common, you know, just had an arrangement with maybe only doing morning classes in high school or whatnot. Substituting one course for another. So maybe, you know, I know I was a poli sci major and I needed a math, but like computer science was like, could be my math. And I was like, that'll be easy, which I got through it, but it was easier than a math class.
Right.
They do provide note takers, sometimes having recording devices, if they need a Latin language interpreter, extended time for testing, which we kind of already talked about. If having a school computer provides screen reading, voice recognition, or other type of adaptive like software or hardware, those are kind of some of the examples that you know, you might have the accommodation written one way, and the disability service office might say, we don't really do that, but here are some examples of things that we do. And there are some colleges out there that offer extra counseling, tutoring for our students with that are neurodiverse. Sometimes they're at no extra charge, but then at the other end, you may be provided with that. But
that's
it's
a good point. Yeah, to bring up that there may be an extra cost with that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there are specific programs too. Like I know UCLA, for example, and Cal State Northridge also recently created a program. There are certain schools that have created programs specifically for certain populations of students. So students with intellectual disabilities, students on the spectrum, that it is not technically a full like gen ed college program, but it's set to those needs. That is it's completely different of a breakdown in costs, but also a breakdown in like the expectations. And so it's important for families to look out for those, because those programs can be exceptional because they can provide more, not because they're obligated by the law, but because they choose to.
Usually
these are private institutions. UCLA is a little bit different. Some mm-hmm. public institutions do create these programs too, but you're paying for it. You're paying for it a little bit differently. Same right. if you went to a private K through 12 that was a school geared towards kids with special needs mm-hmm. or specific programming, the same, right. same thing.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of those programs pop up mm-hmm. at different colleges, especially some of the bigger state colleges.
Yeah.
But the credit, I mean, you can't exchange the credits for one of their typical programs either. They're at a different level.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them you're getting an associate's degree, and others mm-hmm. you're getting a completely different kind of degree. It's not a bachelor's, mm-hmm. not an associate's, whatnot. Right. Mm-hmm. And some have, I know that some programs do have transferable credits. So there are programs out there that will do some classes that are like remedial that you wouldn't mm-hmm. be able to transfer. Right. But it's more of like that prep. So these mm-hmm. are like the first classes they're going to take to kind of bridge that gap between high school and college. Mm-hmm. But then they can take the regular classes after that and then eventually right. transfer. So it just might take a little bit longer.
Yeah, it's just the prerequisite for the actual college classes.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsor, and then I'm going to have Amanda and Vicky back, and we are going to continue talking about this because they've got so much information, and I just love to listen to them. So take a drink of water, and I'll be right back with you. But I want to talk about our sponsor, Seven Sisters Homeschool. They are a no busy work e-book curriculum, and they're a group of moms who are 20 plus year veterans for homeschooling, and they have subjects on their website that you can download, pay for, free, some of them are free, that include career exploration, drama and electives, financial literacy, literature guides, social sciences, and more. And these women wrote these specific things for their children, and now they're sharing them with everyone else as all their kids have graduated and moved on. And so they say that they are the six sisters and you are the seventh who join them in homeschooling by buying and using their curriculum. So definitely want you to check that their information out. It's very unique. It's a lot of high school things that you would normally not find anywhere else. So thank you, Seven Sisters, for sponsoring this broadcast and actually all of our broadcasts this month. So I'm going to have Amanda and Vicky pop back in, and we are going to continue this conversation about just what you need to know about accommodations after high school. And so my question for you is, so what if a student is not looking at going to college? And parents say, well, do I really even need to worry about this accommodation thing? What would you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, I definitely think having something, a document that is most updated before the child graduates from high school is important. Obviously, once you become an adult, the ABA takes over. So it might even be important, you know, and it's not necessarily, you know, employers cannot discriminate based on your disability. You know, they're not supposed mm-hmm. to have you to tell, you know, tell me what your disability is. But, right. you know, sometimes if you want to just kind of be upfront, mm-hmm. that might be nice to have so that you're not scrambling to try to find a private assessor to evaluate you or whatnot. But you know, I think that that's just something to take into consideration. I think also for a lot of our kiddos on IEPs or if they were in homeschool, to have them try. A lot of the community colleges have smaller classrooms. They have really flexible schedules.
Right.
And that might be a nice stepping stone before mm-hmm. you get to a state, you know, a state university or college. Right. I think that that is just, you know, and if you, you know, everybody's all about the gap year, right? And I think that that's important. But I also think that kind of keeping it alive, maybe you're just doing an art class at a community mm-hmm. college, right? And you're on campus, you're kind of feeling how it is, I think is important. So you want to be sure to have that most updated info that Amanda was explaining earlier within your IDP or some other way.
Right.
So that in case you did want to go, there's a natural gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gap. It's not that, you know, you're just saying, you know, I was taking my gap year. This is the most updated that I have. You know, right. Do you need something else? So that at least you have that history, because it's all about proving history. Because if you end up coming day one to college and you've never had an accommodation for extra time on tests, that's going to be a bit more difficult to try and get provided to you if you don't have a history of it.
Yeah, and it's I mean, the students all the time leave their senior year of high school having one plan, and how many of us change?
Exactly.
So just because the plan is not to go to college doesn't mean, you know, it might not change in a year, 6 years.
Right.
But the other thing is, if they go into the workforce, this IEP and the assessments can also help in the workforce, because the ABA also prohibits discrimination and provides for reasonable accommodations in the workforce. So while there aren't always across the board the same level of expectations of, well, give me your IEP and I'll provide you accommodations. In fact, many employers probably don't even know what an IEP is. But if you're taking that step and you provide it to them, you're putting yourself on a better playing field, because it's not you just going to your employer and saying, I need these accommodations, which they should under the law honor that request. But just like a, you know, someone who needs a physical accommodation, they may be asked for a medical note, a note from a doctor in in a workplace for that accommodation. For a lot of these intellectual disabilities or any kind of, you know, processing issues, you're not going to have a doctor that's going to write a note saying these are the things, right? So instead of your doctor's note, it's the IEP. It's your assessment. That's how you're demonstrating that there's a need. And there's been that pattern, like Vicky said, that history of needing. And not only needing the accommodation, but demonstrating that it is successful for you to be productive, right? That you're not just asking for it to ask, because I think in the employment situation, it's really important for that employer to see, hey, I'm still gonna get good work out of this person.
Right.
It's just about providing access a little bit differently. Just like how we all are doing virtual everything right now. It's a different way of doing our work. Accommodations could be should be considered the same way. It's just it's not doing something necessarily a different job, although sometimes it might be a little bit different. Many times it's just the way we're doing the work, providing that access.
Just uniquely how you do your best work. And those IEP is that, it's kind of that photograph of this is how this is how this student has learned to work best around their challenges. And and isn't that great? Because we all want to be able to work around our challenges, because we all have them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you had talked earlier, Vicky, about testing. What happens if, say, a student's already graduated now this month, and they're listening to their parents or them are listening to this conversation going, oh, is it, how hard is it to get testing after you become an adult or graduate? Is there any difference in that?
No. I mean, it goes back to the history. So as long as you have those IEPs, and then if you have a private neuropsychologist or even a licensed educational psychologist complete the testing for you, that's completely appropriate as well. And then you have your past history to show, oh, you know, this private evaluator has also indicated that I have X, Y, and Z diagnoses. And here's the history of me actually needing it and why and how it's been used in the past. So that's not difficult at whatsoever. Depending on your insurance may cover that evaluation. It may not, you know, and pricing for that varies greatly. You know, you may pay $900, but it's a 2-page report, whereas, you know, some of them can go up to like $5,000, but you're getting, you know, 60 pages of, you know, everything.
Really good information.
I think depending on how long it's been, you know, you want to get as thorough as possible to show them the college admission board or even the disability office, like, no, this is why I had to get this private one, but here's also the history that I've had in school needing these accommodations.
Yeah, that's good information.
Yeah,
definitely. So So as far as resources for parents, you know, what should they be looking at? I know we've thrown out some like the IDEA and the ADA, and maybe they don't even know what that is. Can you kind of describe those things? I know most of our parents do, but we often have people watching our show going, what are all these things they're talking about? I don't even understand them.
Just very broadly, the ADA is the Americans with Disability Act, and it was passed in 1990 and then amended in 2008. And essentially, it just prohibits discrimination against individuals with disabilities in a public sphere. Mm-hmm. So your public universities, vocational schools, community colleges of that sort cannot discriminate based right. on your disability. Mm-hmm. So, you know, through case law, and obviously, you know, the different sections within the ADA. So Title II is the public services aspect, and Title III is the public accommodations and services operated by like private entities. So that's why it includes mm-hmm. private universities. Mm-hmm. That is where you're really kind of getting to the meat and potatoes of how they cannot discriminate. So, you know, they cannot discriminate on your disability for admission. They can't not allow you to take a certain class, things like that. Mm-hmm. So that is where like the ADA really comes in, is the driving force behind accommodations on the SATs, accommodations for you in a college campus setting, which is different than the IDEA, which is specifically for ages 3 to 22. And the 22, you know, 18 to 22, a lot of schools will have vocational programs. So the right. district is still responsible for mm-hmm. the child. And it may be until 22. Mm-hmm. So that's where there might maybe some overlap. But it just depends, I guess, what entity you're dealing with. If you're dealing with the school district, you know, and they're still mm-hmm. responsible, they're still responsible. Otherwise, the ADA takes over.
Right. And these are all national laws. They're not state specific. Yes. So every state Absolutely. Has to follow them. But the education laws in your state, of course, govern other things that mm-hmm. That are also has more to do with the funding of those right. monies
yeah.
than the actual law itself.
Yeah, typically, well, your state education code typically is going to be talking about the funding, but generally those education laws mirror the federal laws, mm-hmm. and in some cases they can expand and provide additional. Right. So for instance, in California, our California education code provides clarifications on things that the federal law might be a little bit more vague, mm-hmm. specifically regarding timelines. So where the federal IDEA talks about the timeline to assess students is within a reasonable time. In California, we have very strict timelines on when a school has to respond to a request for assessment within 15 mm-hmm. days. You right. have 30 days to hold an IEP, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, just like the ADA, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and the IDEA are all funding statutes. So mm-hmm. essentially what that means is public institutions or places of public within the public sphere, if they are receiving federal funds, which almost everything in the federal sphere is,
right.
That it is you are receiving those funds in exchange for the promise mm-hmm. that you're going to follow these laws, which is why many private institutions do not have to follow these laws to the same extent because they are not receiving that funding.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if they do allow for federal assistance, so the FAFSA, a lot of students right. get federal mm-hmm. aid, and the private institution accepts that, then they cannot right. discriminate either. Mm-hmm. So that's important. Because most of the mm-hmm. time we think, oh, the IDEA doesn't apply to, you know, private schools K-12. Oh, okay. But they're not, you know, receiving federal money. Obviously, if you're taking the federal money, you gotta do what yeah. they say.
Right.
So where yeah. the ADEA mm-hmm. comes in. Yeah.
Awesome. I do want to let you guys, all of you know that are watching us live, you can definitely add your questions in as well as, you know, mine. And so definitely put those in the feed, and we would love to have you be part of our conversation. We've got about 20 minutes left as we're just talking with Amanda and Vicki about just what you need to know about accommodations after high school. And, you know, we're talking a lot about after high school, but we're talking about stuff before high school too. And when we started, you started talking about even in those elementary years. And so this isn't just a subject for families who have high schoolers, or maybe you're starting high school this next year, but what about for parents who do have younger children and they're kind of thinking, they have no idea what their child wants to, you know, do or be when they grow up. And what are some things that they can start working on even when their child is young? I know you talked about life skills. It's very important.
Right.
But just as, you know, as you're making those, you know, make discoveries as homeschoolers, we study our students because we have, you know, a few. And like with my oldest, I knew he was an engineer from the beginning. We did mechanical engineering when he was in fifth grade, and he just graduated from college as an engineer this month.
Wow.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, especially since he was on the spectrum when he was in kindergarten.
That's wonderful.
But you know, those types of things of what can we be looking at, and what are some things that maybe we should be noting, you know, that we can be prepared for, so that we aren't trying to scramble in those last few years of let's get all this stuff together. You know, what should we be recording and writing down way ahead of time? Because you talked about that history.
Yeah. So you talked about life skills. So life skills are typically how are they caring for themselves, or we sometimes classify them as independent living skills. Mm-hmm. So are they able to take directions? Can they use the bus or are they able to drive, use a map? Are they able to exchange money, pay for things, balance a budget, that sort of thing? Those are like life skills, doing laundry, cooking, taking care of themselves. Those are typically in the realm of those life skills, which is entirely important. The other category that we would say is really big is what we would call our vocational skills. So a student's vocation is school. So what are the skills that the student needs to be able to have mastered to be successful in their vocation in school? Mm-hmm. So those really start in preschool and kindergarten. When we talk about preschool and kindergarten, you're not really learning much academics in the traditional sense of the reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? You're learning about the learning to learn, the being ready to learn. So the following directions, the being able to initiate a task, complete a task independently, everything revolving independent skills, following along. And then there's also what we would later on in later years talk about as like study skills as part of that as well. So managing our time well, knowing that I have 20 minutes, am I going to finish this? Or do I need to ask for help because I don't know where I am? These are all things that a lot of times are being addressed in the IEP. But many times we put in a lot of accommodations to support. So we might put in an aid support to help make sure the student is on task, stays on task, and completes their work, that they follow directions, that when the teacher is speaking, they're looking at the teacher and whatnot. But we quickly forget that aid is not always going to be there. And there's that fine line between, okay, the student needs to learn the academics, and the best way for them to learn the academics is with the aid or with the one-on-one assistance, right? So to a certain extent, we need that. We need that because we need to master those skills. But we have to figure out a plan for when that is going to be, that support is going to be weaned off for a certain extent. Because when they leave...
Just to jump in, Amanda, sorry to interrupt, but I think also parents tend to forget about all of the technology that exists that we rely on. So if I didn't have my calendar, my Google Calendar, and like several reminders that we were recording today, I might have been, no, I'm just kidding. But I think where I was going is the weaning off, but not, you know, your child may not necessarily be ready to not have anything, but I think starting to notice, you know, you have your iPhone watches that tell you to stand up every hour if you haven't moved, right? Breathe when your heart rate's going up a little bit. There are watches, I can't even think of that. I just requested one last week. There are even pens that read things aloud. So sometimes thinking about, okay, what does that aid actually do? And is there a technology? Is there technology that the child can kind of start working with, because the first thing that you pick may not necessarily work, right?
That's a very good point.
That assistive technology gets a bad rap. sometimes because, you know, it's the voice to recognition that a lot of people already have on their iPhones and aren't necessarily talking about all this wonderful stuff that they could completely take with them into college and look like everyone else.
Exactly.
And not always just technology, but strategies. So the strategies to, you know, when the student comes into class, maybe they have a list of these are the things that I need to remember. I need to remember that when the teacher is talking, maybe I'm taking notes, but then maybe I need to remember to ask the question, raise my hand, or the fact that I need to raise my hand to ask the question. Right. We do cue cards a lot of times on students' desks that can easily translate to an app on your phone, right? So we're looking at what are the skills that are the foundation of a successful student. And those are the skills that we either need to teach the child or we need to accommodate in some way so that they're not needing another adult to. So if it's an accommodation that we're using an aide or adult assistance, a one-on-one, maybe it's the parent if they're doing homeschool, they're providing that assistance now. Eventually when they start to get older, you know, we're helping them develop these skills so they can be somewhat independent. With sensory processing, many of our kiddos have difficulties with sensory processing. When we talk about teaching them strategies, we kind of start in the process with just teaching them the strategy itself. So here, here's a squish ball, squish it in your hand. Or here, go walk around the classroom. That's the first step. The second step is having them identify when they might need it. But that is going to take an adult saying, it sounds like you need a break. Here's here's your ball, right? But then the third step is they're identifying, I'm stressed. I'm a little overwhelmed. I need this. Can I have this? So the same goes for a lot of these independent skills. Is it's going to be a progression of teaching them of, you know, kind of doing it for them, then teaching them when they might need it, and then teaching them how to be independent with it. And whether that is using technology or using a notepad or something, you know, so these are all really important skills that, you know, if you look at what makes a successful college student or even an independent worker. And I think a lot of adults still haven't mastered a lot of these things. And that's why you get adults that have trouble in college classes because they haven't learned these skills either. So, I mean, any student can benefit from learning these skills starting in kindergarten.
And IEPs are not just for academics. It's for social, emotional, and for vocational, which that all falls under, you know, that those latter two that districts sometimes overshadow with the academics.
And parents do too. And the parents, homeschool parents, are most guilty of not even realizing they're doing all these things for their student, and because they do them all the time. And I always tell parents, take a step back, look at what you're doing, because are you enabling your child instead of teaching them? And, because we're with them 24/7, you can like approach somebody and start talking for them and forget that you're not supposed to be doing that.
Right, exactly.
So that's awesome. I love that, that movement towards independence and that constant, you know, and that's what's great about, you know, assessing every year and having those IEPs is you look at those things and are we progressing on these goals and what are we seeing that needs to be worked on this year specifically?
So,
definitely. That's great. Well, as we wrap up, we got about 10 more minutes left. Is there anything else that you thought of as we were talking that you want to make sure to share with parents?
Yeah, I actually, I looked up, there is a couple different books out there that parents, and I can send you them so that you can get the right spelling.
Yeah, great.
The first is the K and W Guide to Colleges for Students with Learning Disabilities or Attention Deficit Disorder. It's like the longest title ever. It keeps going. Parents, students with disabilities for college and deficit.
It was written by a professor. Yes.
I thought, I forgot that this is the longest title ever. It's a really great guide for our neurotypical kiddos and neurodiverse kiddos to kind of take a look at it. You know, obviously in the title it says attention deficit disorder, but even, you know, preparing them for college success. Another great one is Peterson's Colleges with Programs. for students with learning disabilities or attention deficit disorders. I think that those two books are very helpful for a lot of parents when they're helping their child decide on different colleges. I think college visits is important. I mean, we're in the middle of pandemic, so I don't know how much, but there are virtual tours of different, you know, obviously want to get a feel for things, but I think those two guides are helpful and kind of put you in the mentality of a neurodiverse kiddo instead of trying to, you know, to go to the colleges that your child already has in mind, which is still a good idea, and see what their the disability service office provides. And even with the counseling, tutoring, the things that we had talked about. But if you don't know any, if you don't even know where to start, those two books are pretty helpful for some of our clients.
That's great. Yeah, I'll include the links in this feed on Facebook, as well as when I redo the YouTube video, I'll include everything, including, you know, information about how you can reach Vicki and Amanda and their organization, which I want to definitely bring up. And so, Amanda, I'll let you... is there anything else that you want to share as we're wrapping?
You know, I think the only other thing that we didn't touch on as much is preparing for the social aspect of college.
Oh, yes.
I think, and this is something that, again, you can start working on as early as elementary school. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times parents think of social skills as just friendships. And it's more of a fun thing, right, to have friends.
Right.
And certainly it's a very important part of childhood to have friends and to socialize, to have that fun aspect. But it's equally as important for a student to develop social skills to help them be productive in college and in the workplace. Because many times college classes still have group projects. You might be in a lab with other people. You might have a job where you're working with people. Maybe you work on campus and you're interacting with a lot of other students. So you have to be able to be successful communicating with other students, maybe asking for help, having that positive interaction. So, you know, if by the time the student is getting to middle school and starting high school, if, you know, I know a lot of parents are often concerned, well, they don't have friends, and you know, it's hard when they don't get invited to birthday parties and whatnot. But it's equally as important for the IEP team, or, you know, if you're a parent, if you're homeschooling, to find programs that allows a student to have that socialization, to develop those social skills, not just for the fun aspects of it, but the reality of when we think about what is it going to take to be successful in school. You know, part of that is having positive peer interactions too. And, you know, college is a lot more challenging oftentimes than high school for many students, but it also is a lot more rewarding for many students simply because the social dynamics of college often are very different than high school. There's not as many cliques. There's a lot more diversity oftentimes. So you can find people. So, you know, a helpful tip for that, just besides just, you know, engaging in positive social engagements, you know, throughout their childhood. But when you're approaching getting close to colleges, when you're looking at colleges, I think it's important to look at what are the social groups, the clubs, the activities that are on that campus. Because while you might find an academic program that provides more accommodations, if there's no clubs on that campus that are of interest to your students, they're less likely to be engaged socially on that campus. So it may not be the best because, you know, we see college dropout rates are huge. And and part of that is they don't feel like they fit in or belong, right? So the more that a student feels that they fit in, that they belong, the more likely that they're going to be motivated to be successful in school, right? That motivation is a huge part of it too. So I think it's important to look at those parts of the school. And, you know, some colleges do have programs that are similar to the high school, like Best Buddies programs. You know, so there are programs out there that help specifically with socialization for students who have disabilities. So that's something to look out for too. And that may not be part of the department that gives the accommodations. It might be something different. It may be a group that was built by students. So it's not necessarily, right, you know,
yeah,
it's a student organization. Mm-hmm. So those are important things to look at too, because I think when we look at how, not just motivated, but mm-hmm. how much is the student actively engaging in their education, right. Oftentimes at that age, it mm-hmm. means so much having friends and knowing people on campus, and, right. and especially if they need help with anything, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that peer group that if it's not there, then they just don't feel like they're really
yeah.
part of the school. And
yeah.
even in a job environment, you could see
absolutely.
That too. You know, how do people interact within this office, and is it a right fit? You know, I think for all of us, that's some people
right.
can survive in
right.
some environments better. But if you really need to have that be able to bounce things off your verbal processor and nobody wants
right.
to talk to you, you don't work well in that environment.
Yeah,
so,
no, not at all.
Definitely. Well, awesome. You ladies have so much information to share, and you have a podcast. You want to talk a little bit about your podcast with our...
Yeah, I mean, it's just called the Inclusive Education Project Podcast. You can mm-hmm. find it at our website or anywhere you listen to your podcast. So it could be on your iPhone podcast app, Stitcher, mm-hmm. Google Play, anywhere really. And yeah, we have a lot of different conversations. We've had a stroke of luck that's lasted for the last year or so, where we've gotten some really great guests who are just experts in their own field. So we've had a couple college counselors, or not necessarily counselors, kind of like educational consultants. Mm-hmm. So Janice Royal just sticks in my head, and we've had a couple of ladies on just recently this year, and their names escape me. But it was just such a great thing to discuss with them, because if this is just so overwhelming for you, you don't have time to look at books or anything, mm-hmm. this is what these ladies do. They've been
right.
to the campuses. They know specifically mm-hmm. Janice, specifically because she has a daughter with special needs, mm-hmm. has gone through. And so then even just having that support is mm-hmm. oftentimes super helpful. So that's something, you know, that's just an example of some of the things that we've talked about on our podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking time out of your very busy schedules. I know you two are extremely busy, and I appreciate that.
Thank you
and
for just, having us.
Yeah, this was great.
Thank you for accommodating the time. I know it's not the usual time.
Well, and it worked out well for me. I was supposed to be traveling these next 2 weeks, but my conferences were canceled, but I had surgery last Thursday. So this is I had major surgery last Thursday. I'm barely walking. So I have enough energy for this today.
Speedy recovery.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, but we're going to continue this conversation on high school through the rest of this month as well. But thank you so much, Vicki and Amanda, for your time
thank
and
you.
Talking about accommodations post high school, because that's just a very necessary topic, and you shared so much good information. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Peggy.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Yeah, and thank you, Seven Sisters, for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. I will not be back next Tuesday at a regular time, but the following Tuesday I will be back, hopefully feeling lots better. But we're going to talk with Ruth Mead. She is a retired special ed teacher, and on the 16th, and she's going to be talking about helping your teen develop learning independence, which is kind of what we were talking about today.
Yeah,
but
she
has a career of working with students and teaching them how to do that. So so she has a lot of really good information to share with us. And so it'll be exciting. So so thanks, everybody, for watching. And we'll see you again in about a week and a half. And thanks again, Amanda and Vicki. It's been awesome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.